Morgen, Damen und Herren, uns kann man einfach finden mit uns verheiraten in der Abend. Let me welcome all of you to this meeting, Portfolio Committee on Faith and Enterprises. We have invited the department to come and brief us, not the department, ESCOM, to brief us on the build programs, particularly at the Medupi and Kusile power stations. Before we start, I will request all of us to introduce ourselves. My name is Peter Maluleka. I'm chairperson of this portfolio committee, and I'll invite all members to introduce themselves first, and the representatives from ESCOM will then introduce themselves. And the rest will introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Ofri Mukwena, a member of the portfolio committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Pieter van Dalen and I'm also a member of this committee.
I'm Gloria Bowman, a member of this committee.
I'm Gerard Koornhof, member of the committee.
Chairman, Chairman.
Chair Onkovestein from ESCOM.
Chair and Papalas Bulunga from ESCOM.
Chair, I'm Karen Davidis from ESCOM.
Chair, I'm Hilary Jaffe from ESCOM.
Matalong Vanilla ESCOM.
Lara Domudisani ESCOM.
Sam Manduana from DPE.
Jisang Mujimi, Committee Secretary.
Eric Poskaj, researcher for the committee.
Donnie de Villiers, Cecil.
My name is Luca Nutralata. I'm from the SABC.
My name is Denise Donnelly. I'm from the Mail and Guardian newspaper.
I'm going to give over to Mr. Chair to just introduce the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairman, honorable members. It's always a great honor and privilege to get an opportunity to come and present to your committee. Our presentation is made up in three parts, and the first part will be done by Kanan, and then Kuopas, and then when we answer questions, Babalaz and I, we will assist them in answering those questions. First of all, I also would like to apologize for the absence of our Chief Executive Officer and Chairman. Yesterday we had the Audit Committee meeting, and today they are sitting in the board meeting where they are considering the annual report for this financial year. So they send their greetings and really apologize profusely for their inability to join us this morning. However, the delegation that I am with is more than capable to probably be able to deal with all the questions that we're going to get from members, and if there are questions that we are unable to address, we'll be able to send information. We have given you a presentation that we have in front of you. Those that got a presentation yesterday, we've added a few slides just to give you context or to give you more information regarding our build program. At this point in time, I'm going to call upon my colleague, Kanan, to start with the presentation, if you allow, Chair.
Yeah, just to say that the Chair and the CEO have communicated with us that they would not be able to attend the meeting, and we have agreed that, seeing that it's a board meeting, that it's important for them to attend that meeting, but they've assured us that they will send people who are highly competent who will take us through this presentation, which we had requested them to actually come and do. I just want to remind members that the request for this meeting really was for us to be officially briefed with regards to the labor unrest that's been taking place at these two plants, Kusile and Medupi. And that's really why we're here, I think, for the benefit of those who are also not part of this committee. That's the reason why this meeting is sitting today. Over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again for the opportunity to address this committee. We will just give you an overview of the presentation and the context of the new bill program, and I'll do a bit of that before COVID Stain goes into the specifics of the two projects and the incidents. We want to give you a comprehensive background on the labor unrest, and we hope that you'll get a sense of that. And as Mr. Choi mentioned, we'll answer questions as they come up. And then also to share with you what are current mitigation plans based on the incidents that have happened and what the current situation is. Just to give you the context, and you might have seen this already, and my apologies if you have, but just to remind everyone that we have over 27 operational power stations in South Africa, and Eskom has 41.2 gigawatts, and these are three slides that are probably not in your pack. We in the country have around 43.5 gigawatts that is operational. That includes places like the municipalities of Johannesburg, Cape Town, Sasol, and so on. And we import 1,500 megawatts from Cahora Bassa in Mozambique. On the demand side, we expect a peak demand this year of 37.5 gigawatts in July. We also know that our largest consumers, just 138, take about 40% of our demand, while the remaining 8 million residential customers take about 20 to 25% of the demand. So this is the current situation in South Africa. This is more detailed, and it will be sent around. You've seen it in the annual reports, but we've summarized it again. If you look at what is currently installed in the country in the Eskom fleet, it's nearly 42 gigawatts, 49,953 megawatts, as you see on the table. But operational is 41,200, close to that. The reason for the difference is that we're still returning to service units at Grootvlei and Komati power stations. That will be completed by 2012. And then thereafter, you'll start to see Medupi and Kusile coming online. So this is just to give you a sense of all the power stations that we've got in the Eskom fleet. This is the current bill program. So to give you context, you'll see for the financial year 2010-11, we brought back some units at Grootvlei and Komati, 200 megawatts at Grootvlei, 110 at Komati, as well as upgraded the capacity at Arnott, which is 30 megawatts. So for the financial year 2010-11, 340 megawatts was added to the grid. For the financial year 2011-12, we're anticipating to bring 740 megawatts onto the grid. And then you'll start seeing in 2012-13, Medupi coming online, and thereafter Kusile coming online in the financial year 2014-15. We anticipate the current Eskom bill program to be completed by 2018-19. And by then, from last year till that period, we will have added just over 12,000 megawatts onto the grid. We've also put some pictures just to show you the building sites, and I think this committee members, many members have been to some of the sites. These are just pictures of Gula, Medupi, and the construction that's going on. Also a sense of how much we have shown these sites before, but just to remind the committee, that if you exclude the interest, because everyone, when we share these numbers, we also include the interest. We've excluded the interest. The current costs for Medupi are close to 100 billion rand, and for Kusile, 121 billion rand. And when you add interest, you get to the numbers that you've seen around. as of December 2010, and we'll give updated results in our annual financial results, updated completion statistics. But as of 31st December, we shared this at our last briefing, we had nearly completed 40% at Medupi and 18% at Kusile. These statistics will be updated shortly in our annual financial results. I would like to hand over to Kovas now, who will take you through the specific issues around Medupi and Kusile.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity. We've just indicated on the slide here to orientate you as to the position or location of Medupi and Kusile power stations, and then also in Gula pump storage. I think the reason that we've included in Gula pump storage there is that in Gula traditionally has been lying in an area that's quite volatile in terms of trade union and other local activities in terms of IR, for example, and we have experienced in the past also problems at Ingula. This time around, with this year's strikes and IR action, we haven't experienced anything at Ingula, just the two power stations Medupi and Kusile. It's going to quickly to a bit of recap. With Medupi, we started construction in 2007. As you can see, Kusile, April 2008. The first concrete that was poured in Medupi was in July 2008. At Kusile, March 2009. The first significant concrete structure, which is what we call a lift shaft to the boiler house, was completed on Medupi in August 2009. And in Kusile, April 2010, and then at this stage, we are still projecting that the first unit of Medupi will be unloaded in 2012, and the last unit in 2015, where in Kusile power station, the first unit planned to be unloaded in 2014, and the last unit planned to be unloaded on 2018. Just to go to the next slide, we have shown this slide quite consistently all over in terms of the size of the bulk program on these three specific sites in comparison to other projects in billions of dollars. I must just say to you that when this slide was calculated, it was calculated at the cost or exchange rate value of 10 rand to the dollar. So if you now look at it, I think it just had to do a bit of a sum with the rand standing at $7 to the dollar, but it gives you more or less a number of about 250 billion rand for the three projects with Medupi, Kusile and Ingula altogether. Okay, then the reason why we're here today to talk to you about what happened in terms of labor unrest, just in overall, I think it's important for us to share with you that Eskom do not have many employees on these projects. On these projects in general, I've got about 150 odd Eskom employees whose main task is to manage the project and interface the different contractors. And the majority of the employees are employees of the contractors and not of Eskom under the different contract agreements we've got. On these new build sites, we have got project labor agreements in place. It is project labor agreements with the intention to just make sure that there is alignment between the employers, which is the contractors, and their employees in terms of things, for example, like working hours, pay weekends off, processes in terms of IR disputes, etc., and so on. And it's just an addition on top of industry agreements and also Labor Relations Acts that's in place in the country. The project labor agreement does make provision for the use of expat labor and the approval process of such use, and there's a process that the contractor needs to go through which also includes approval from the Department of Labor before expat labor can be deployed on these specific sites. Furthermore, the contractors that do seek our permission to use expat labor on these projects, do you have to get approval from Eskom, firstly, and secondly, have to demonstrate that they have tried to recruit the specific labor within the country? At this stage, I think the biggest single area where the challenges are lying in terms of the supply of local labor is suitable skilled welders. And if I say suitable skilled welders, we're talking about welders that can weld the specific material and the process of welding that specific material that's been used on these plants, which is what we would call quite exotic, but it's a quite high technology material, and it's got a very specific process in terms of welding the material. Chief, if we then can go to Kusile Power Station specifically, because I think what happened at Kusile and Madupi are slightly different, and I would like to take you through the two sites separately. On Kusile specifically, site activities were disrupted on several occasions, starting the 18th and 19th of April, just before the Easter break, and then also the 4th to the 6th of May in that week. And on the 6th of May, all our construction activities were brought to a halt due to the protest action that erupted into acts of destruction of offices, motor vehicles, and some plant. I think the two most significant events that preceded the work disruption was an event by employees from Roshcon, the contractor, the contractor's management must accept a memorandum detailing the demands with Eskom's project general manager as a witness. And the second event relates to the application of the no work, no pay principle detailed in the project labor agreement on the site specifically. Now, I think it's quite important to also make the point that both of these actions taken on the two various dates was illegal. Now, when we go to Roshcon employees, who mainly were involved on the 18th and 19th of April, and then also on the 4th of May, their basic demands were, and I think this is more or less word for word what was written down, is that they demand training to all unskilled laborers to relevant skills, demand 45% of female employees to be trained in relevant skills, demand re-employment to all local employees, to new coming and current contractors at the Kusile project, demand first preferences to all Kusile learnerships, and then they demanded to be part of a committee that worked directly with Eskom information centers that deals with recruitment. I must also say there that the Department of Labor in the area is also involved in these recruitment centers. Now, these demands were received in response to the normal process in a project where work has been completed and a number of employees, about 600 employees, would have been demobilized from the project. And these demands were received by Roshcon to look at those 600 employees and look at, as I said, retraining, re-employment, etc., and so on for those specific people. If I then go to a sequence of events on Kusile. On the 18th of April, a verbal unofficial notification of impending protest action was received by Roshcon employee shop stewards, indicating the employees wanted to hand over memorandum. The people stopped the work, but they did not hand over the memorandum on that specific day. And then on the 19th of April, the Roshcon employees clocked in, and what we mean with clocked in is that they physically went to the workplace and went through the gates that would clock them in as being at work, and subsequently returned to the picketing area situated outside of the main entrance to the site. Now, for the reasons of normal orderly IR protest, or whatever the reason might be, we've got a dedicated picketing area just outside the main entrance to site. And then on the 2nd of May, the Kusile executive team met with all the Kusile principal contractors on site to share the Kusile safety plans, as well to understand what the contractor's plans were for the return of the employees on the 3rd of May after the workers' long weekend. Now, what I mean with that is that we had the Easter break and then we had the 1st of May celebrations, and that whole period of time was negotiated up front as a holiday period for the workers on the project for them obviously to be paid just before Easter to go to their homes, enjoy the celebrations that goes hand in hand with Easter and with the 1st of May celebrations, and then return to work for the 3rd of May. Okay, then if we go to the 4th of May, the Roscon employees handed a memorandum to the management in the presence of Eskom management as the workers demanded. And then the KCWJV, which is the Kusile Civil Works JV, the acronym, is a joint venture between three different companies in our country, went on strike in sympathy of their Roscon counterparts. Now, on the 6th of May, the Civil Works JV employees reported for work but did not commence with their normal duties, and Labour requested feedback from the Civil Works JV Industrial Relations Officer regarding the PLA principle of no work, no pay. Now, this no work, no pay principle applied to what happened on the 4th of May with these employees that went on strike and did not work on the 4th of May. I must just say to you that subsequent to receiving the news that they are not going to be paid for the 4th of May, it is that afternoon on the 6th of May that after lunch that these employees went on a rampage and has caused the following damages to site. And I think the note on the bottom of the page is quite important, that all the damages were focused on those two specific contractors. And if you look at the way that our project is set up in terms of the layout of the contractors' yards, these specific two contractors are located within the location or the site layout of other contractors, and the other contractors' property, fences, nothing has been touched whatsoever, and all actions were directly related towards Roscon, their labor broker capacity, and then also the civil joint venture. Now, the damages to site is that a few vehicles were stoned, but 11 contractor vehicles, 5 from the civil JV and 6 from Roscon, were set alight, 6 offices and 2 large cranes. And of the 2 large cranes refer to the earlier comment of some plomb that was set alight. These 2 large cranes was in the area of the offices that were set alight. The looting of the offices and the stores, specifically again towards those three companies, of which capacity that's indicated there is a labor broker to Roscon. The west wing of the civil JV office block was also set alight. The office block is built in basically a U-shape, and the west wing is just one of the three of the wings of the specific building. One specific Roscon office was also set alight, and then we have, been quite lucky, but also with some proactive action, that there were no injuries that were reported afterwards at all on the specific actions that happened at Kusile. The current situation on the site, Chair, is that the site is open and operational. All the contractors are back and working on site except for Roscon and the civil JV. The affected contractors are continuing with plans and actions to bring the employees back to site. That's now Roscon and the civil JV. And criminal charges of arson, possession of stolen goods and malicious damage to property were laid with the police, and arrests were made within days of the incident. In terms of the risks and the treatment strategies, from a contractor employee point of view, if the contractors cannot reach an amicable agreement with the employees as soon as possible, that will result in delays in delivery from the contractors. I want to just say to you here that at this stage, the works being done by these two contractors is not on a critical path for the project, and is at this stage not impacting the progress on the project specifically in terms of its critical activities that's happening on the project. The contractors will go through normal disciplinary action as per the project labor agreement, which means that a proper hearing will be held, and that's in process presently. And then after that, obviously, the employers have to take relevant action pending the outcome of the hearings. We have also, as Eskom, made sure the site is cleaned up before all workers returned, and that means that all the buildings, the vehicles, and the cranes that were burned has been removed from site, and those that can be refurbished will be refurbished as such before it returns to site. And then we have taken quite a bit of additional security measures to make sure that we've got more control over the specific site when this type of thing erupts on site again. And one of them is, for example, the installation of many cameras on site to monitor what's happening in different locations on the site specifically. Chief, then go to Madupi Power Station. The site activity ceased, and the project employees were evacuated from site following the violent protest acts. Violent protest by contractors workers that took place on Tuesday the 10th of May. This event was subsequent to a grievance regarding expatriates employed on site. There were a series of engagements regarding the dissatisfaction by some of the contractor employees around some tie welders, riggers and pipe fitters that's on the project, specifically employed by subcontractor of Hitachi, the boiler contractor. The claims made are such that these aforementioned traits are not scarce in South Africa, and such opportunities were supposed to be given to fellow South Africans first. And then, obviously, again, the note that this was a legal strike. Now, just to go into more detail, as a sequence of events, on Tuesday, 10th of May, approximately 500 workers belonging to Marion Roberts Projects, which is a subcontractor to Hitachi, went on a violent protest on site. They started throwing stones, tried to intimidate other people, and we have had some unprecedented violence on site. I must just say to you that this is not the first time we've had our action on site, but this is the first time that we had it in terms of this level of violence. The number of protesters grew rapidly, and it was felt that the site was unsafe. Madupi, in total, has got approximately 11,000 workers, and all other people on site that day specifically, which is about 8,000 of the 11,000, because of the balance is working either night shifts or maybe off-site, were safely evacuated from site. And then the law enforcement agency, specifically SAPS, were called in to deal with the situation, and I think they dealt with it very well. The damages to site is that one small office was burnt, and bus was burnt, three cars was overturned, two cars were burnt, and then obviously quite a few million rands of loss in production was caused because of the delays. And then to date, we know of 11 minor injuries that were recorded, and most of them were mainly due to the stone throwing that happened on site specifically. But none of these people were either admitted to hospital or had to be hospitalized at all. It was just all first aid incidents. In terms of the current situation at Madupi, the site restriction was lifted on the 16th of May. Contractors gradually mobilized from the 16th onwards. As on the 27th of May, the site was progressively operational, with over 8,000 workers reporting for duty on the 27th of May. And there were some other workers still to be coming in the afternoon for afternoon shift. The police presence is maintained until safe and fully normalized. At this stage, Hitachi with Mary Roberts Projects, the employees have signed an agreement to return to work and have acknowledged disciplinary action as well as further disciplinary requirements on site in terms of the normal proceedings that would happen. Organized labor have been consulted on the remobilization process and the conduct of their employees. Now, at this stage, criminal charges of arson, public violence, and attempted murder were laid with the police, and four suspects were apprehended. One suspect handed himself over to the police on the 27th of May, and all the suspects are out on 5,000 rand bail and must report to the nearest police station every Sunday. Okay, then just in conclusion on both sites, overall in total, firstly, I must say that there has been overwhelming support from both the provincial and local government offices in the areas of the two sites and other key stakeholders right throughout this period, and we're very appreciative of that. The contractors are given a chance to resolve the issues with their employees. There are continuous engagements with key stakeholders, including the surrounding communities, because obviously both these power stations and projects are built in areas where there's a high percentage of unemployment, and obviously there are many people that has got an interest from an income point of view in terms of what's happening on these projects. Then Eskom and contractors will use valuable lessons learned to prevent or better deal with future incidents. Eskom is working towards the recovery of lost time so that Eskom meets its commitment to deliver Special Medupi by 2012. And at this stage, the delivery of the two projects is not under threat as a result of the specific strikes. Okay, and that is basically the report that we have from ourselves. Sorry, if I can just go back. So I think, by and large, in summary, we've had these violent actions. The actions did not impact anything on the plant specifically that is under construction, but rather vehicles and buses, and as I said, two mobile cranes that was in the area of the offices that was looted. Action has been taken on both sides by the South African police, and the criminal charges has been laid, and the delivery of the two projects has not been impacted by the action that was taken by the offenders. I think that's a brief summary. I think there's just one or two slides that Conan would like to conclude with.
Okay. Chair, thank you very much. Now we'll pause here, and we will do one other slide when we close.
Okay, that's it. So there's nothing from your side again until after questions have been back. Before I give members an opportunity to raise their questions, I just want to find out whether or not you have some ongoing monitoring and evaluation to pick up, you know, timelessly if you would have any, you know, disruptions or eruption of labor unrest taking place. Then what are the measures in place, you know, to ensure that you don't have such future, or you're not surprised by such action in future? What we're going to do is to have members to raise their questions, and then you will then respond to those. So I'm going to ask you to take down the questions as they are raised. Honorable, maybe before that, there are two members who came in while the presentation was on, and I couldn't stop there too. In fact, three, and I'd like to ask them to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Lance Schreiling from the Independent Democrat.
Good morning. My name is Chris Khololo, member of the committee.
Rose Sondo, member of this committee.
Honorable Pandalen, Honorable Dr. Kurenhoff, Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Khreiling, Honorable Khololo. Yeah, in that order.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairperson. In my ward, or the ward that I had, there's a place called Happy Valley, and then a very big bus company came to me and they said, well, we want 150 people from Happy Valley because we want to train them as bus drivers. And so I gave, went to Happy Valley, I got a list of names for 155 drivers, and they went on this course, and about 2 weeks later I saw them all back at Happy Valley. I said, what's happening? Why are you not working as bus drivers? These people said they were going to train you. They said, no, we earn too much money, then we won't get a house. So we, if they get a permanent job, they won't get a house. These are people that are living in informal settlement. And then the other thing is, when you go to restaurants in Cape Town or anywhere, you will see all the people from other countries working there. And when you ask them where are they from, they tell you where they're from. And then you ask them why are they working here, not the local people. They say, no, those people there, they are too lazy. They don't want to work for this money that we get. So how does this affect you, the local labor that you have? Contractually, you have to employ local labor. But if you have a problem with the local labor that are either not skilled enough or that... they just don't want to work. I mean, you get people like that. They don't want to work. How does that affect you? I mean, we must talk about it quite frankly. And if you can't employ these people locally because they don't want to work, then you have to get laborers somewhere to build the project. And then I wanted to ask something. You know, this is very serious, this action that has been taken with the violence on it. I was just wondering, you know, a power station is a national key point. And it's supposed to be the highest place of security. And if I go there and I try anything, just steal a plant or something, I'll probably get charged with a sabotage. And if you think that these power stations that we are now building, they are strategic, you know, they are very strategic at the moment because we are running out of electricity and they need to be built rather sooner than later, finished. So how does this, you know, this point that it's a national key point and those people don't get charged, when does it become a national key point? Is it only when it's given up and Eskom takes charge of it, or is it from day one when we decide that it's a power station? And then just another little point that you said in your introduction, you said that we import 1,500 megawatts of electricity from Kahora Basa. Now every time I've been asking questions about Matraku, they tell me, well, we're only using our system as a backbone to supply back to Mozambique, the aluminium smelter, it's Mosul. And so I don't know how you can use it as part of the mix that we have if we import it on the one side and send it out on the other side, or are we claiming the green energy money or something on it to say that we're also green? So I just wanted to know how that, you know, when I ask the questions about it, what are we paying for it and what are we selling to Matraku for? They said, well, it's just power that's coming through the country and now you are using it here as a part of our electricity. So those are the three questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Took me a bit by surprise there, as I think these strikes did as well. I mean, if these events suddenly came out of the blue, I mean, at least to our opinion, I was just wondering whether there was a build-up to this. I mean, were there frustrations building within both of these sites? And were these two actions linked as well? I mean, the ones, they're happening quite far from each other. But it seems to be similar demands as well around the fact that foreign labor is being used where we don't have those skills. Was this something that was really dealt with right up front in terms of explaining to local laborers the kinds of conditions around that? And I know that in a number of presentations that Eskom has in fact made, as well as Transnet, the localization part of it has been something that has really been emphasized. And you've also said that you're going to put in place measures to upskill people. So is this being fast-tracked now? I mean, these are kind of skills such as welding, things like that. I mean, surely this is something that we can train people up to do. So what are the plans that are going to emanate from this? I mean, are you dealing with these issues sufficiently? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. There were two presentations. So my first question is just on the first presentation. Firstly, there's clearly an electricity gap between now and when Medupi come onto stream. And you've, in a previous presentation, explained to us the risks that you see. Maybe just for clarity's sake, can you just repeat the risks that you see from your side for the energy gap that exists for the next 24 months in this country? Also for us and the committee to refresh ourselves, but also for the public in general to see again what before we go into the winter in this country. Secondly, you didn't refer to the incident in Duva, the power station. We were a bit surprised and taken by surprise when we learned about the incidents in early February, and we would just like to know, maybe not today, but in future, if you can inform the committee what exactly happened there and why we were not informed as a parliamentary oversight committee. With the labor unrest, immediately you were proactive and sending messages through to the parliamentary committee to say there are some incidents of labor unrest, and we were pre-warned to sort of be updated on what's happening. So that's my first set on your first presentation. Secondly, you talk about, I'm asking, what is the implication of this labor unrest on the two power stations for your first unit on load in 2014 in Kusile and 2012 in Madupi? Very broadly, you say there are no implications, but at the same time, you say you're working towards recovering lost time. Can you explain to the committee what is this lost time that you're talking about? And my last question, on the way forward, do I understand you correctly that the labor dispute has been solved between the contractors and the workers? Have they solved the skills problem, skills development problem, or lack of skills? Are they employing now foreign labor? Are they training new labor, skilled labor? I don't get the impression from your presentation what exactly is the status quo at this point in time on the way forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yeah, four quick points. The first one is to welcome the by ESCOM to the portfolio committee in order to apprise us of the happenings there, because we relied a lot on press reports and other media reports. So one welcomes it. But as parliamentarians focusing on this area of public enterprises, we are obviously acutely concerned about the fact that some of these problems could not have been foreseen. Nobody is a clairvoyant. Perhaps I should have started by saying that in welcoming the presentation, one appreciates the damage control of ESCOM, because I think it could have spiraled out of control, and this would have been absolute disaster. So one appreciates that. three quick points. Number one, question. What was your experience with the last power station that has come built? Where was it? You were a fleet of 27. What was your experience with your last build? Right? Which could have informed you that when you were back upon the city of UD, some of these problems, or that experience could actually help you to anticipate the current problems, although life savings. That's the first point. The second point is, who is actually the employer? You see, because in the presentation there, I get the impression that ESCOM is standoffish. It says, no, we are not a employer, only 150 people there. The rest is the burden of the contractor. Now, I assume that the ownership of this project is actually ESCOM. So I find it difficult to understand why in the presentation ESCOM has said the flood is, and not we as ESCOM. Because you seem to be disowning the labor problems. And one senses also that there was a slight lack of superintendency. We did not superintend these contracts that were there. He just basically said, right, you were the labor broker, you'll sort it all out. And the other time frame is a contractor. Just give us the key when we're finished. Now, it appears to be a bit escapist. I don't want to be too hard to harsh on Eskom management because of the nature of the projects. But the one would have loved to hear direct taking of responsibility in terms of employment. And as far as distancing ourselves, no, look, Eskom, we only have a policy number of people there, staff, and then the contractor for whatever project was to do. Lastly, Chairperson, is one is relieved to hear that in terms of the patch schedule, the critical path, there will not be any serious damage to that, because this obviously will have serious not only energy implications but also political implications as a country, because the whole world is watching how this is going to be managed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Two quick ones, actually. Most of my questions have been asked by my colleagues here. It's on the issue of the labor unrest, actually. I just want to check from Eskom as to how much losses have they incurred in this whole two projects, Medupi and Kusile, because I can imagine the amount of money that is being lost with this strike. Well, that would be my only question. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I take relief on the last presentation because that's the one that I had an advantage of. I take relief from your last sentence, which reads, the delivery of the two projects is not under any threat as a result of the labor unrest. I think I take your word on that one. But I'm reminded, as I was coming in, I met a lady who was just running, saying that, oh, outages are back with us. I really don't know what was she talking about. I was worried about winter. On the earlier question, really, I would emphasize as to whether we are heading for outages this coming winter. Secondly, on the labor unrest, I always fear to fan fires. But when Honorable Member Van Dalen said, as mense veli verki, as mense beide, wat wel werk, or there are people somewhere that would want to work, I take fear on that one. And that made me to look at this, the Hitachi Marine Robots Projects agreement that was signed, whether those workers were made to sign under due pressure or it was an amicable arrangement between those projects and the workers. I would want to check the impact of that on the backdrop of, if you don't want to work, there are people elsewhere want to work. And also the cases that were reported to police, what is the effect of that arrangement with the entire unrest? I think those are the few questions that I wanted to ask. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. Request that we take the questions not in the order in which they came, because there are themes that interrelate. So I'll ask first Kanan to take those questions that deal with our state what we refer to as the status of the system at this point in time. Thank you very much. And then we'll go to Babalasi and then Kuvas.
Thank you. Thank you, members, honorable members, for the question. Let me just start with just points of clarification before I go through the themes of system status. You'll find on the first slide that we did, which gave an overview of the South African system, we do on the supply side indicate what we import from Cahora-Bassa. On the demand side, in that 37.5 gigawatts, we also include what we give to Mozo through Motreco. So you'll see on the supply and demand, it is balanced. We give just over 800 megawatts of the 37.5 is the demand from Mozambique. The reason we show it like that is that picture is about how we balance the system. It's not all the contracts and so on. So that's the reason. If it's not clear, we can always clarify that later. We don't deal with the contractual issues in that system. It's more how we manage the system. The second one is just to recap the message that we gave when we came a few months ago. As Eskom, we have consistently said that over the next 2 years, until we build the first unit of Medupi, the rate of increase of demand is anticipated to be higher than the rate of additional capacity that comes online. And therefore, we face a very big challenge in the next 2 years. We also know that we have to maintain our existing coal fleet, which is middle-aged, and we need to give the space to do that maintenance, and that's the other challenge, so that in future we can ensure that there is performance, we can assure the performance. And if we can't get to do that maintenance, we'll have unplanned events. So those are the concerns and risks that we have raised. We have said that there are plans in place to deal with those risks, but it cannot rest on Eskom alone. We need, for example, all 49 million South Africans to contribute through energy efficiency measures, energy conservation, our big customers to use the electricity wisely. Eskom has to focus on its own plant performance, and we also need to introduce independent power producers, especially in the areas of core generation and renewable energy. So those are the measures that we talked about before. And we talked about also introducing a safety net, such as a mandatory energy conservation scheme as a last resort before load shedding. So those are the risks that we talked about. In terms of this winter, Eskom is not planning to do any load shedding. There's no such plan. We are managing the risks, but we do say it's still risky. We don't also let people get comfortable. We all need to contribute, otherwise these risks could materialize. So there's no plan to do load shedding, but the risks are there. And Eskom is very pleased with some of the responses. We must say some industrial customers are voluntarily saving. But we do see an increased demand. We are seeing it on the system when we have the coal fronts. So that's probably the situation. Just in terms of Duva, we will come back and we apologize to the committee if we didn't give you timely information. We'll make sure we do as we get more information. Just to inform the committee that the investigations are underway. Hopefully they'll be complete soon, and our chief executive has indicated before that once they're complete, and even Eskom doesn't know the full results because it's done independently, we will inform the stakeholders. But at this stage we cannot give any more information because we haven't got the results yet.
Thank you, Chair. I think the key questions on labor, it's only local labor. Local labor does want to work, and in fact the key dispute is coming from demobilization of about 600 workers. In other words, their work is coming to an end, and therefore management does have to take consultation, and that's what sparked some of the actions. The strike was not a surprise, but the violence was a surprise, that you do not expect that workers will engage in violent acts. But we were expecting that there was action, because towards the demobilization, we are under pressure to ensure that we find alternatives, and all these demands to put people on learnerships are real demands that we need to work around, ensure that the local people are not losing out in terms of construction. I think the emphasis, as we have said, that on all the sites we have to up the security just to ensure that every worker is safe, so that we don't have to repeat. That was the big thing that we were surprised about on the violent side. There is no link between Duva and Medupi, Gusile. Also, if you look at the issues, are totally different. It's more skilled workers that were involved in Medupi, whereas at Gusile, it's general workers in particular involved. And in terms of training, we have started training welders, but it's going to take a bit of time. So we do have to enforce the PLA, which is the project agreement that we have with labor. Every worker on site and every organized union on site have to sign the PLA. And therefore, that's the rule that we apply. And anyone violating the rule, we have to talk very hard, because that binds the working together on all the sides. Otherwise, there shouldn't be a situation where every partner in the agreement can easily move away from the agreement and does what is not in the agreement. So we enforce the agreement, and as workers come back, we ensure that there is communication, there is engagement, but we have to ensure that the agreement we have are respected by all parties.
Maybe just talk about three specific things. I think the one question that was raised as to the second last statement that's on the board presently is that we're saying that we are working towards recovering the lost time so that we can make our commitment in the last statement, which seems to be a bit contradiction from that point of view, that these two projects are not under threat in terms of their timeline yet. The second last bullet point is talking about the contractual relationship between ourselves and the contractor. The contractors have got a contract with us to deliver certain deliverables at a specific time, and actions, for example, like industrial action, is for the account of the contractor in terms of the contract. Now, that also means that we are interfacing the different contractors with one another in terms of their activities and access to certain parts of the plant whenever they need access in order to do their work and roll out their functions. So when we have an incident like this, it happens, and unfortunately, that, for example, being, and I just want to take one example, being a civil JV, a joint venture at Kusile, that they have to complete their work before the mechanical people can start building their mechanical structures on those foundations, etc., and so on. So therefore, it's quite important for us to work and get the civil contractor now to recover the lost time, so that we do not impact the mechanical contractor that comes after after the civil contractor. As projects go, if we do not get that right, the recovery of the mechanical contractor or the lost time lost for the mechanical contractor will be to the account of Eskom, which we will have to then contractually resolve with the civil contractor that will be liable for the time lost in the process. So it becomes a whole contractual circle that we have to manage at the end of the day. And I think the second last bullet attempted to talk to that, but maybe I did not make it clear enough in order to not create a bit of a contradiction there. In terms of National Key Point Act, these two sites are not declared as National Key Points yet. They will be declared National Key Points once the first units are producing power on a commercial basis. So they are not being managed from that point of view. But I then must say to you, as I have commented, yes, the top point on the specific slide that's on the board presently is that the type of cooperation and reaction we've had from local authorities but also from the provincial governments in both cases has been to the level of a national key point. Just to give you an idea, I myself have been appointed to liaise with the Limpopo premier and his office. And for example, they have sent down one of their generals and about 250 policemen during this period of time to help us to make sure that law and order prevails both on site and off site and including in town. So that's just to give you some idea of the type of support we got, which I must say to you, in my experience on the projects the last years has been unprecedented. We haven't seen such support. In the past when we had threats of IR action, we did alert the police. We've got a very good relationship with them in order to maintain order, etc. and so on. And normally we would have about 50 to a maximum of 100 policemen on standby for in case any violence would break out. I must also say to you that, as Babalazi pointed out, that we were not surprised by the IR action taken. We knew it's going to happen, but the intensity of it we did not expect. And I think the second thing that surprised us is that normally, as per the rules on the sites, which is governed by the PLA, the protest action would happen at the picketing area, which is a demarcated area just outside the main gate of the power station. And in both cases, this time around, the employees peacefully entered the power station as though they're going to work, and only after lunchtime started the action on site specifically, which I think surprised us a bit, and we need to make sure that we will not be surprised in the future. Chairman, you've asked a question as to what plans we've put in place around preventing this happening again. We've had quite a bit of action in the past at Ingula pump storage station, as I indicated earlier when I started off. And learning from there, what we've done at Ingula power station is to have a few people that would work in a covert action with the employees and to gather intelligence in terms of what's happening on the ground level so that we can be prepared for whatever happens. And being caught, I would say, a little bit surprised by the action that happened and the way it happened on these two specific sites. We've implemented the same action or the same mitigating action is maybe the right word, in terms of gathering intelligence and then having a very close cooperation with the relevant officers in the police on both provinces to make sure that the intelligence also flow through to them in terms of happening on the specific sites.
Your first question, Chair, about monitoring and evaluation. Apart from our daily getting information, we also work very closely. We've got a very strong stakeholder relations that we have with the provincial government and the local people. We formed a structure where we meet on a monthly basis, and our chief executive officer himself is part of that particular structure. So it gives us information about what people want to know, what are the issues, and there are normal issues like procurement, you know, like being employed, and some of the issues that were mentioned as probably the causes that led to the strikes. Thank you.
I think also in terms of the experience of the last power station, we last built a power station that was commissioned was Majuba Power Station, which was commissioned in the late 90s. And obviously that was done under very different circumstances as well, in different conditions. So I think it's very hard to draw parallels in some ways. Different requirements, also in terms of how we want to make sure we get the benefits of those programs locally. So it's very hard to draw some lessons. We have been trying to do that, but it is very hard, and we've had to learn again with new people and new contracts.
There was a question, who is the employer? The employer is not Eskom, but Eskom takes full accountability of what happens in the project. The people are employed by the contractors, but the PLA governs the relationship between any employer on site with Eskom supervision.
In other words, we supervise the contractors in terms of the principles that are enshrined in the PLA. So that forms our constitution, how we relate and act. With this unrest, we have to be involved with the employers directly so that the right things are done, but without us taking responsibility for their workers and relationship.
Probably these are all the questions. If there are any that have not been answered, we'll probably do so in the second round.
There was a question there about the losses, I think financial losses, from Honorable Hololo. That's the one that was not answered. As a result of this action, how much losses did Eskom incur? Mr. Bulunga, you're going to answer this.
Maybe we didn't say that. I think in Medupi we have 16 contractors, which are the main contractors. They do different things at Medupi. And about 161 subcontractors that are taken by the 16 major contractors. And therefore, when I say employers, each one of those companies, they come with a team of people to do specific work. We are responsible for, once people get in, the companies, they have to adhere to the PLA. The site belongs to Eskom. Same thing when you hire people to come and do refurbishment in your house. You don't own the contractors that are owned by the bricklayer or the carpenter, but you take overall responsibility for what's being done. In other words, it's your laws that they had to be obeyed. We follow the same.
Thanks.
Chief, I can just talk to the losses. I apologize for getting about the question. But in the way that we set up our contracts, the losses are for the account of the contractor, and in the case where the contractor or his employees causes the time lost or the incident occurred. And the contractors are also expected to take out insurance, for example, in the case of, for example, cranes being damaged or equipment or office being damaged, etc., and so on. So from that point of view, and I'm making maybe a little bit of assumption that the relevant contractors has insured their plant and the equipment and their offices, and the damages to the account of the contractors in terms of rand value. If there would be time lost, obviously we as Eskom and as a country would suffer from a point of view of the point that's made earlier as to the importance of these two projects. At this stage, as I indicated, we do not see that these specific incidents is causing delays on the project, and therefore we do not see any costs at this stage to Eskom.
Thanks. Thank you.
This one probably is just one more time an appeal to South Africa and the 49 million. That's the one. An appeal to all 49 million South Africans to assist us in conserving energy, electricity. It's a good thing to do for the environment. It's also good for your pocket. And if we all work together, we'll be able to ensure that by the time we are able to provide electricity to all, we have gone through all the challenges that we have at this point in time. So we would really appeal to all members of parliament, all South Africans, to join us. Remember your power. You switch it on. Then if we are not using it, please do switch it off. Thank you.
Thank you. I think in the in the last discussion we had with your chairman, we actually said we will try to find a way where a presentation regarding this should be made to all members of parliament so that we get their support, because members of parliament have what we call parliamentary constituency offices, and they may be in a better position to spread the word amongst their constituencies and so on. So we will still try to look at that and see if we can find some time to invite you to come and make a proper presentation to the different parties, and whether it's in the individual caucuses or whatever, we'll have to look at that, because I think it is something very important that we need to get. You say join us or partner with us so that we get the whole nation to partner with you. I think this then brings us to the end of this presentation. I just want to say that, you know, labor matters are very, very complex. That's why my question was, you know, or the advice from my side, that we need to, on an ongoing basis. I saw Mr. Bulunga cringing when you mentioned covert and intelligence work that's being done. I just hope that those whom you identify as the troublemakers don't disappear. Because when you hear such language and you think about but people are ordered to be removed. So I think it's not something that you signed the PLA and you were satisfied that you've covered everything. But, something will always come up. Hence, we need to, continuously look at the situation and see where we can improve. And so, and the relationship and interaction with local government and the province is very important. To so that people know that there are opportunities. There are so many opportunities here, and only so many, and not more than that. And, this is what the project is all about, and this is how it can benefit the surrounding communities and so on. So I think that communication with the community there will be very important. I just wanted to check something. Maybe Mr. Bulunga, you will be able to answer. Will we be able, or when we have another meeting with you, let's say at the end of this project, or not at the end of the project, maybe after a year or so, because we've set ourselves also this challenge that, in terms of job creation and skills training, that we will be able to say, that over this period we've been able to empower so many people with skills. Because I think that's something that the committee will also be very interested in as we interact with ESCOM, to know that we are done with questions. Done with questions. I haven't given you a chance. So, you know, something like that. These are the number of jobs that we, opportunities for jobs that we created over this period from this project, and these are the skills that we've been able to transfer to our people. I'm not saying you should answer to this one now, but just to know that at some point we will be engaging on this.
Yeah, Chair, I'll allow Bunga Wabibin to talk a little bit about numbers, but also when we come for the presentation of our annual report, we will also add those numbers that will be audited numbers. And then, of course, I will just bring in mind by a colleague of mine that tomorrow, with the budget vote, we'll have our exhibition on 49 million. So there'll be a lot of members to that. Yes, Bulun.
Mr. Bulunga answers, because Honorable Van Dalen said, just very briefly.
Yes, it was just another dimension of what you were saying. How many of those jobs are local, and how many of those are for international jobs?
Thanks, Chair. We'll take the opportunity when you report on our final result to add what we already putting together for the department, and therefore we'll cover on that, both local and how many international skills we've brought into the project.
Thank you so much for this presentation, and I want to thank. But I want to ask members of the committee not to leave because we still have to look at that. Thank you for the presentation. And, you know, sorry, there was your liaison, parliamentary liaison officer, used to almost on a daily basis send me information on the developments there. We want to just acknowledge that and appreciate it. But I think that will help in future. I'm not saying this thing will happen. I'm anticipating it to happen anyway. But in anything that would need, you know, such information to be communicated to members, I think that will really help until maybe the day when we have an opportunity like this to go into it in detail. So I think, you know, in future we will try to, if that could be communicated to all members. Okay. Thank you so much. Members will remain.
But can we... I just wanted us to quickly go through the